Okay.
All right.
Actually, I'm not even sure if I'm in the shot. Okay, we're good.
All right.
All right.
So,
could you tell me about the nature of the data that you're consuming?
Some of my initial work here at the Media Forensics Hub was focused on GIS and geospatial analyses of Twitter data. So that initial work was focused on Sputnik 5 and the communication or the conversations. Some of that initial work was focused on the conversations of Sputnik 5 at a global level. So what we wanted to understand was there a coordinated campaign by Russia to promote essentially Sputnik 5? And if you're not familiar with Sputnik 5, Sputnik 5 was a COVID-19 vaccination. The Russians were the first to announce a vaccine for COVID-19. Now, it was definitely debated about whether or not the efficacy of this vaccine, but nonetheless, it was something that was certainly in social media by the Russians was pushed as, you know, this is a great thing. And those early work, what I did was I was looking at the spatial data that we can get from Twitter data. One is user-reported location. So in a profile, a user can set up and say, I live in New York City, for example, or I live in Clemson, South Carolina. They can also say, I live in the universe. And there's a lot of filtering and data cleaning that you have to kind of go through to get there. Another place we can get geospatial data is also the place. So Twitter will analyze, I believe, I don't know their methods exactly, I'm guessing here, is that there's some natural language processing. They look at the Twitter content, the tweet itself, and see if they can identify place names, like, again, Portland, Oregon, or somewhere Paris, France, right? And they put that information in the Twitter database. So where my focus has been is I've switched from analyzing data and from a historical perspective, meaning that I access a million record data set from Twitter that's going to have information about the Twitter author. It's going to have the tweet. It's going to have dates and times and other information such as user-reported location and place names mentioned and things like that. And that early work was focused on mapping it from a historical perspective, but it became somewhat, to me, obvious as an opportunity to begin to look at it from a real-time perspective. And why would you want to look at it from a real-time perspective? That's because these campaigns, these disinformation campaigns, are really happening in real-time, right? So, and for us to be able to essentially, for us as a team studying mis and disinformation, to be able to track campaigns, disinformation campaigns, we have to be able to follow them in real time. Rather than waiting for when that tweet goes viral, why not get into it before it goes viral and understand that there may be several bots that are working behind the scenes to try to amplify that conversation, for example.
Do these coordinated campaigns by bots, are they flash in the pan? Are they quickly deleted? Or do they last on Twitter for a while?
Well, you know, part of Twitter tries to identify bots and shut them down. Twitter also tries to identify potential real users of Twitter that may be participating in a disinformation campaign and shut those accounts down also. But there is a lag there, and there are tools that we're developing that we think can help us identify bots and real people who are part of, say, a campaign.
That was a good segue, because my next question is, could you tell me a little bit more about the tools you're using? Excuse me. Could you tell me a little bit more about the open source tools? Well, first I want to ask, are they open source tools, or is there anything proprietary you're using?
No.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about the open source tools you're using to build these different... I'm going to cut this down.
It's spreading. Sorry.
Basically, tell me about the open source tools, Meerschaum, Grafana, et cetera, that you're using to build these disinformation identification tools.
Yeah, so we started off working with Meerschaum, as a real-time listening tool. So basically what I was able to do is, using Python, I wrote code to query the Twitter API version 2, and start to pull in that data and set it up so that on a local system on my desktop I could query that data. But again, it was very difficult to run that on my desktop at my office. And where am I going with this? So the tools that I'm using are primarily focused on Meerschaum and writing plugins for Meerschaum. How much detail do you want me to go in on that?
I mean, it's totally up to you. I'm really glad that you're highlighting Meerschaum. That's kind of
it's the only thing I've been using.
Yeah. So just to make sure, correct me if I'm wrong. Was it easy for you to start prototyping and scraping that data quickly before you deploy into production, say working on your desktop and then immediately scaling up? So how has Meerschaum, Grafana, and that whole open source suite helped you go from your first steps to hitting the ground running and collecting tons of tweets?
Yeah, so those first steps were focused on developing the code to query Twitter and pull the data in that I wanted to work with, and then structure it the way that I needed to structure it. When you pull in data from Twitter, it comes in a JSON structure, and you have embedded JSON embedded JSON dictionaries within dictionaries in these social media data sets. And so first off, there's a bit of complexity there that you have to sort through. So you can flatten out that first layer of that JSON file, but then you have to go back in and flatten out maybe two or three levels of JSON. And so that was one of the most challenging aspects of that, the initial coding, was how to figure out and parse the data and access the data that we wanted. After we had solved that, the next steps were to think about how can we get this up in an environment where we can run this at any frequency that we want. So I want to pull it in at 30 seconds, or I want to query the Twitter API every 2 minutes or every 10 minutes. And some of that's going to play into the topic that you're listening to. Some topics, so for example, we have some work with Ukraine right now. There's a lot of conversations about Ukraine, and there is a lot of tweets to pull in about Ukraine. Other topics, maybe so, for example, the 2022 election coming up, maybe not so many tweets. And so that's going to affect the amount of data that we pull in. But what I was able to do is I was able to develop this initial code set that was running on my desktop. And then basically all I had to do was to modify that script so that I was no longer writing to a CSV file on my desktop, and upload that and set up the Meerschaum environment, and then set up that plugin, that initial plugin, using the code that I literally had written on my desktop. And then at that point, really, it was just plug and go. So once we were able to launch that plugin, we're instantly writing data to the Timescale DB that we had set up within the Meerschaum environment.
Sure. And there's you definitely gave me a lot there, so I might slice it.
Yeah, I know.
Don't feel like you have to answer too much, or like.
Maybe I should just give you the shotgun approach.
Sure. I mean, as long as you give me pauses.
Yeah.
I can make it seem as if you had scripted ahead of time. And if you wanted another take, just tell me. Okay, actually, you kind of answered both. I said, where do tools like Meerschaum and Grafana fit in with your research?
Yeah, I didn't really talk about Grafana, but I can.
Yeah, you can. So let me ask that to you.
Yeah.
Where do tools like Meerschaum, Grafana, TimescaleDB, where do those tools fit in with your research?
So TimescaleDB is really important for us because a lot of the data that I focus on is time-oriented. Right, so everything that I access generally has a time stamp in it, and in my career that could be a water quality measure in an estuary, or it could be a utility measure such as, you know, how much power has been consumed by a building at any given time, or in this case, when was that tweet sent. So That's why time scale is very important for us, because we are collecting a lot of data and we need it to be able to scale efficiently and quickly. So time scale is very important for us. Additionally, Meerschaum, what is great about Meerschaum is that I was able to set up Meerschaum literally after the first time. I was able to set up a second instance of Meerschaum in 30 minutes. So the first time I did it, I had my learning skills I had to go through, my learning curve I needed to go through. More of that was just because I needed to refamiliarize myself with some Linux skills. But after that, I was good to go. So I had Meerschaum up and running. And then the third aspect of Meerschaum that I really like, or the Meerschaum stack, is Grafana. So obviously, all this data processing, all this filtering, all these analyses aren't going to do a lot of good if we can't visualize them, right? So what Grafana gives us an opportunity to do, especially the way that it's been integrated with Meerschaum, is that once that data is being inserted into the Timescale DB, it is then available for us in Grafana. So at that point, I can go into my Grafana dashboard, set up a Grafana, access that Timescale DB table, and immediately start pulling in the table and designing a visualization that's appropriate for the data that we're using or the data that we're analyzing. Those are some of the aspects that have been really helpful, is that the integration of all those tools in a single environment have really jump-started this research of ours.
Sure. I'm going to take a quick pause.
Yep.